Hey, friends, we've been talking about what Jonathan Cahn refers to as the Dark Trinity, and we're on the third member of that Dark Trinity, which is Moloch. When you look through the Bible, as we've seen, we see child sacrifice in almost every nation before the gospel or before God's law comes into that nation. And so the question we're asking in our podcast today is, if America has largely become apostate, if we've turned from God, if we've embraced Ishtar and the sexual revolution and sexual sin, would child sacrifice, blood sacrifice follow if Moloch comes back in to America? And I think the answer is a resounding yes, and we're going to talk about that today, the correlation between modern-day America and some of these ancient godless cultures as it relates to child sacrifice. And so you're not going to want to miss this podcast today.
Hey, welcome to the Ron Johnson Discipleship Podcast.
Here we are once again connecting the dots between what's happening in our world and the truth of a biblical worldview. And again, just been excited about the series that we're in. For me, it's helping to provide some context into the mess that we're seeing right now in America and how we got here. Of course, if you're listening in for the first time, we are in Jonathan Cahn's book, The Return of the Gods. Strongly encourage you to pick up your own copy, follow along with us. Andrew and I are providing our commentary each week along with his insightful writings. And we've been talking about what he calls a holy trinity, or it's actually a dark trinity, not a holy trinity, a dark trinity, a very unholy dark trinity. And Andrew, bring us up to speed. We talked about Baal.
Yeah, we talked about Baal, which is the god or the demonic force, the god, little g god,
yes.
Demonic force of prosperity, of rain, fertility, of power, yep. Money, greed.
Yep, yeah. The god who likes to erase the lines, right? A god of apostasy who causes nations and people to turn their backs on truth and on the Lord. For money, success, prosperity, and then talk about the second one, because you know when you live in a nation like America where we've enjoyed, you know, unfettered prosperity for most of our existence due to our Judeo-Christian roots, you know, when you get kind of fat and sassy and you have a lot of extra money, sometimes you live a loose life, and that kind of leads us to the second principality.
Yeah, from prosperity comes indulgent in the flesh, indulgent in pleasure, in lust, and that's where the second demonic force, Ishtar, comes in, and where she, you know, presented as a kind of a feminine demonic voice, is to lure us into sexual seduction, sexual perversion, transformational of gender identity.
Yep, we'll get into that. That's fascinating. We'll get into that in the next couple of podcasts.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see how these go hand in glove, and that leads us really to the third member of this dark trinity, which is Moloch. And we introduced Moloch last week, this demonic spirit behind child sacrifice, blood, all kinds of ritualistic sacrifices of children and other things. But certainly Moloch is where we're this the principality that we're dealing with in a big-time way in America today. So let's take a look at this, because he starts off with a great question that I want us to entertain today. If Moloch were to return to a nation that was in apostasy, would he once again require blood and human sacrifice? A great question. So again, our foundational premise being that from the scriptures, that if we sweep the house clean and then we turn from God and we reject the Lord, that then seven times, you know, the amount of bondage comes back into the situation. And so we're asking the question, America as a Christian nation that was against abortion, against so many of these things, the gospel had driven these out of our country. If we apostatize, if we turn our back on God, what will happen? Will we see blood and human sacrifice come back into America just as it has manifested in other cultures? And I think the answer is yes. So he gives a historical background here, mentioning that the Soviet Union was the first nation to legalize the killing of unborn children. It did so in the 1920s, soon after the communists took over. And then he goes on to talk about Nazi Germany. This was interesting. He said, you know, the Nazis were not in favor of aborting their own master race, you know, because they had a superiority complex. They were not going to abort their own children, but they certainly had no problem slaughtering other people's children, especially Jewish children.
Yeah.
And then we get into America, and he brings out the point that if there's going to be a large-scale reentrance of Moloch into Western civilization and the world, it would require a massive civilizational turning from God. And he points back to the turbulent 1960s, which were marked by rebellion against everything, which led to kind of a free sex mentality. And, you know, again, that was and I talked to my mom about this, you know, because she was obviously born pre-1960, and she was a teenager growing up in the 1950s or early 20s or whatever. So she was just saying that times were so much different from when the 60s hit, and of course now, much more carefree, much more pure, and just radical shift happened in our nation during the 60s that really poisoned our culture and led to a lot of the messes that we're experiencing today. So Kahn nails the 60s as at the time when America really began to reject our biblical foundations. And prior to that time, he points out the taking of human life, because it was made in the image of God, would have been absolutely unthinkable. So let's connect the dots. He says that these gods work in tandem, hand in glove, and let's isolate that a little bit and help our listeners understand. First of all, he talks about moving from Baal to Moloch, the god of apostasy. You cannot be involved in the murder of your children or embracing abortion if in some way you have not completely rejected the God of the Bible and allowed Baal to erase the lines between right and wrong. So this would have been unthinkable prior to a massive rebellion against God and His Word and His principles. So Baal has to come along, first of all, and say, did God really say that, and turn everything upside down? And so we went through a big season, and we've highlighted this on our podcast, where America just basically rejected the Bible in schools, rejected prayer, rejected our Judeo-Christian roots. In fact, separated all those things. You couldn't put the Ten Commandments.
How about rejecting the fact that life is sacred and life is a reflection of a supernatural being, and instead of life just being random, created from random chance, and life intrinsically doesn't really have any value because we're just matters, and one day we'll break down to matters.
The whole embrace of evolution as quote science and having to keep creation out because it's a value based.
Well, erasing the line between humans and other animals. We're just like everything else, and all these are paving the way to say life is no longer sacred.
Yeah, and these all came, you know, when we speak about Baal, obviously we're talking about demonic principality here, but we're talking about the rejection of the clear revelation of God about male and female, about gender, about creation, as you pointed out, about the sanctity of human life. All of these things are rooted in our Bibles, in a Judeo-Christian worldview. If you take the Bible out, which is what gradually happened since the 60s, then we lose a lot of these foundational principles, and life becomes cheap, as you pointed out. Let's talk a little bit about the 1-2 punch of Ishtar in Moloch. We said Baal ushered in Ishtar, so the whole idea of rebellion and apostasy led to sexual license. But it was Ishtar who ushered in Moloch. And Kahn points out in his book, he says, her mythologies were filled with unrestrained sexuality, yet with no apparent thought of or desire for or connection to children. Her indulgences led not to life, but to death. And we talked last week about this massive severing of sexual expression from the bounds of marriage and from, again, viewing children as something desirable. Now children are viewed as an unwanted accident, right? If pregnancy occurs, then that's not supposed to happen. We're just supposed to have unbridled sexual license with zero responsibility. And certainly children are not even thought of when most people are engaging in sexual expression or intercourse with one another outside the bounds of marriage. They're definitely not thinking about children. And if they are, it's not positive, right? It's not positive. It's like, God forbid that we get pregnant. And so we have this 1-2 punch again with Ishtar and Molech, because sexual license will always lead to unwanted pregnancies. And when you have an unwanted pregnancy, then you need to deal with what is now, what was meant to be a blessing in the first place is now viewed as a problem. Mm-hmm. And so now we have the whole abortion culture. And the tragic results of this disconnection between, as he said, the severing of sexuality from marriage, husbands from wives, men from fatherhood, women from motherhood. He said the most critical bond of life, that of a mother and a child, had eroded. And this is the deeper issue, which is of concern, because the longer you live in rebellion against God, the more your heart gets hardened. And so the natural maternal instinct to save one's child at all costs was weakened, and in some cases gone. And he adds, and so as in ancient times, little children were now brought by their own mothers to the altars of Molech. So this is the consequences of living in darkness for such a long time, is you get used to the dark. And I think it's a sad thing, you know, when you go against your maternal instinct or paternal instincts, you know, even as a father, to want to protect, to love, to care for your child, to where now mothers are the ones, you know, heading to off to the modern day abortion mills, Planned Parenthood, to offer their own children up on, as he says here, the altars of Molech.
So even on this point, it's like we take for granted the ingrained in stable society, how important it is that the maternal or paternal instinct to protect our kids. Like, when I say instinct, I mean this is not something that we have to necessarily teach. It shouldn't be something you have
right.
to teach.
Right.
Ingrained in us is should be an instinct that when we have a child, we want to protect this child, we want to care for this child, we want to love this child. Now, think about society that doesn't have that. That whether it's not instinctive or they have no desire for that, you have to actually ingrain that into their society. How much more work does it take, right, to care for your citizen, for the next generation, to have a replacement population to provide for the elderly as they get older? I mean, just think about the societal breakdown if that instinct is not there. But again, because we were raised in a Judeo-Christian
right.
culture, we take that. We assume that's the case, right? You're going to care for your young.
Absolutely.
Just imagine for a second that is not the culture. Like, that's the tough place to live. That's a tough culture to grow in, to thrive in.
Well, he quotes later in the chapter, Isaiah 49, verse 15, "Can a mother forget her nursing child? Can she feel no love for the child she has born? But even if that were possible, God said, I would not forget you." So there's something natural, as you pointed out. There's something like, we use the word instinct. But all that means is God has placed within parents, and especially a mother, that paternal or maternal instinct where she by nature will do anything to protect her child at all costs, to nurture that baby, to care for that child. And so when you have a culture where abortion is so casually embraced, and the sacrificing and the murder of our children is so casual, it makes you wonder what has happened. What has been the path to get there? How have we become so dark and so callous regarding our own children? And again, it's just a sign of moral darkness and deception that's over a nation. He talks about here the gifts of Ishtar. He said, "Children produced by sexual acts in the temples or by Ishtar's prostitutes on the streets provided sacrifices for the gods." So, you know, when you had sexual acts as part of your worship, there's going to be the unintended consequences that come with that, namely children. And so the good question to ask is, well, what happened to these temple prostitutes who were impregnated? What happened to those children? And what he reveals is this horrific practice of taking those babies and using those babies as sacrifices, as blood sacrifices to the gods. And so he compares that with modern times. He says, as the sexual revolution bore its fruit, more and more children were conceived outside of marriage, and more were likely to be unwanted. And so their lives would provide the modern-day sacrifices of Molech. And he says, America is now offering up its own children as sacrifices. And so we just pause here. You know, the data is staggering. We've, since Roe v. Wade, over 65 million babies aborted. I saw that we broke that down to 1 year. So this was for the year 2020, I believe, based on the number of abortions performed. If you broke it down, you'd have 2,500 abortions a day, 106 abortions per hour, which breaks down to one abortion every 34 seconds in America. I mean, that's really staggering. I mean, if you just sit here and think, watch the time click off and think, you know, wow, every 34 seconds, another life gone. That's how commonplace this practice has become in America. He says it's one more step in the repaganization, one more piece of the ancient pagan world returning to the modern. The civilization that had in ancient times cast out the spirits was now repossessed by them, and America, the shining city on a hill, had now become a blood-soaked high place of Moloch. What a powerful statement. Starting off as a nation dedicated to the spreading of the gospel and the glory of God and being a city on a hill, and now we're at least one of the leaders globally in abortion. And again, how did this happen? I think Khan gives a great explanation for all of this. He says, what was it that could cause a mother of ancient times to lift the child of her womb to Moloch? So let's talk about this, because we find this happening in the language, especially in Hollywood, when people try to explain why abortion is okay. They often talk about success. So what's the connection between Moloch and success? Why would people, and what would make a woman or a father or mother offer a living child as a sacrifice to Moloch?
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned the story last podcast, yeah, in which it was in Chile, in which this tribe offer a young child sacrifice to appease the so-called sea god because of the earthquake they had or whatnot. Right. That was a real documented story. Because in the sacrifice, there is power to bring safety, prosperity, success, financial success, whatever it is, that become a very real thing.
Yeah.
So that culturally was people sacrificed their child for blessings.
Let's talk about this. So the demonic world does have the power to bless and to curse at some level, not at the level that God, the authority that God has. But I remember a pastor from Africa saying that very, very wealthy businessmen or businessmen who wanted to be wealthy would go see the witch doctor. And they would crawl in on their hands and knees in three-piece suits because it was disrespectful to be on the same level as that witch doctor, or to be eye-to-eye contact. So they would crawl in like animals, and they would often offer blood sacrifices or some type of sacrifice for the supernatural blessing of that witch doctor or of that principality on their business. But what this pastor told us was that there would be a level of prosperity that they would experience, but this was interesting. It was one generation. It was never able to pass down to their children. In other words, something would always happen to cause tragedy or to cause, you know, massive financial disaster. It was never able to pass that next generation, whereas the blessings of God are just the opposite. They go on from generation to generation. So I think the point is, you know, when we look at these blood sacrifices and so forth, almost like some backwards, silly thing that doesn't really have any validity. It's just not true. It does have validity. There is demonic power. And so these people would offer their children because they wanted financial blessing. They wanted the crops, the rains to come at the proper times. They wanted success. They wanted prosperity. And to offer one of your children to get that was, for many people, a price they were willing to pay.
I think we mentioned this before. It's really a perversion of the cross, you know, because the heart of the father is to say, hey, I want to sacrifice ourselves, our parents. We're going to sacrifice. A lot of immigrants who come to the United States become very successful because they work them. They sacrifice their own comfort so that they can provide a better future for the next generation, right?
Right.
That's the heart of the father.
Right. I'm going to do without so that my kids can have a better life than I had.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to work really hard to set them up to have a better life. But this is just the opposite. This is, I'm going to kill my child so that I can have a better life.
Yeah.
Right. And as you pointed out, what a great picture. It is an absolute inversion of the gospel and the heart of the gospel. Yeah. Here's an example. It says, out of reverence for Kronos, their god, which is, again, one of these principalities and powers, the Phoenicians, especially the Carthaginians, whenever they seek to obtain some great favor, they vow one of their children, burning it as a sacrifice to the deity if they are especially eager to gain success. So here we have the god of the Phoenicians, who is really Moloch by another name. It's an ancient principality. And he, as he points out, this was happening, by the way, child sacrifice all across the globe. I mean, every culture had some form of child sacrifice, but here they have, again, offering a child, especially if they're eager to gain success. So that's the principle. And then let's bring it over to America today, because how has this demon spirit come back into America, and how is it manifested in this, you know, lust and pursuit for power, success, you know, career, success, whatever, especially in Hollywood? You know, he makes the connection that the same thing's happening today.
This is the modern myth, right? That to advance, to grow, to make sure to protect my career, protect my freedom, you know, this is the sacrifice we have to make.
He said, what would lead a mother to kill their son or daughter today, like in America? Like, how would we do this? Of course, when we're talking about abortion.
Yep.
The most frequently given answer is that if the child lived, it would hamper the mother's life, her time, her energy, her educational or career prospects, her future earning capabilities. The child would be a burden to her aspirations. You know, I did some research before this podcast, and when you look at articles that have been studies done, this is one of the things that's given as a positive. Like, this is abortion is a common good. We must have child sacrifice for the common good, and this is what's given as one of the explanations. It's an equalizer for women, you know. And so we have female celebrities, feminist leaders, other women of influence who would publicly boast that they were able to find success in their careers because they had ended the lives of their unborn children. So again, the argument is the same. It looks slightly different because of the culture, but it's exactly the same. If I have this child, then I won't be able to star in the next movie. I'm not ready for this child. I'm too young to have this child. This child's going to be a burden to my career, et cetera, et cetera. And so we hear the exact same arguments in our culture today.
And I will say, this is not exclusive to women. This is to men who maybe persuade their girlfriends or their wives to get an abortion because they don't want their career to be held back. And they don't
want the burden of marriage or of a child.
Yeah, they don't want that shame. They don't want that responsibility. They don't want to pay child support.
Yeah.
They'll hamper their careers. This is not just a women thing. This is just a people thing, that this handicap of a child. Whereas, you know, you have 8 kids, I have 4 kids, and we recognize that raising kids is it's sacrifice. It's true sacrifice. But again, I go back to that foundational instinct in a thriving society, that our instinct should be to sacrifice for our kids and not the other way around.
You know, I read a great op-ed from Joseph Backholm, who works with Family Research Council. He was commenting on the Ohio issue one, which basically Ohio's abortion laws now are as liberal as California's. And he was just trying to explain what happened and why. But he made this statement. He said, you know, most Americans don't like the idea of abortion. I mean, they get it, that this is a child and you're taking a child's life, and that morally that's wrong. But what he called it was happiness insurance. He said the issue is really not the sanctity of life. The issue is really that Americans love sex more than they love life. In other words, sex has become such an idol that if we have sex and then we have a baby, then we need what he called euphemistically happiness insurance, which is abortion. So if a baby messes up my love life, my sex life, my pursuit of pleasure outside of marriage or even in the bounds of marriage, then I need to have an insurance policy. And right now that insurance policy for Americans is abortion. It's the willingness to destroy that life so that my current life can go on, my happiness can go on unimpeded. And I really feel like he hit the nail on the head. What we're dealing with is Ishtar. The result is Moloch, but the real strong spirit in America is Ishtar, and Moloch comes as the unintended consequences.
My happiness, my freedom, yeah. My prosperity really is an open door to Baal and to Ishtar. Now, based on that argument, Moloch might not be overtly worshipped yet in terms of feeling it's fine to sacrifice, because I think most people still feel like abortion is still not right, based on that article, right? But we're opening the door to the worship of Moloch, to deify Moloch and saying, hey, he's right. A legitimate
source. And what one generation, I think back to Bill Clinton's comment about abortion should be safe and rare, something rare like that. Something in other like words, that, yeah. Like safety of the mother, and this should be a rare exception. Well, we've come a long way, and that's the nature of sin. It hardens your heart. We've come a long way to where now, as we'll talk about in just a moment, people view abortion as something to celebrate. At least a certain element of society does, not most Americans, but those who are on the cutting edge of abortion rights are like, there should be no shame whatsoever. We should be celebrating our abortions because this is a great thing. Again, that's an extreme view, but I think that's where society goes if you don't have an awakening and yep. You don't return back to the Lord and you don't repent of your sin. He mentions here that the Greek philosopher Plutarch describes the music that would accompany the sacrifices of children and its purpose. And I quote here, he said, "The whole area before the statue was filled with loud noise of flutes and drums so that the cries of the wailing should not reach the ears of the people. The horror of the act was so intense that the public was kept shielded from hearing it by the sound of flutes and drums." And so, again, as the child would obviously be in excruciating pain, you wouldn't want to hear that, or you wouldn't want to hear shrieks or anything that would disrupt your emotional equilibrium. So let's play loud music so that we don't have to listen to the horror of what's really taking place. And I think, again, there was a movie that was popular, very, very popular as far as exposing the evils of abortion that was called Silent Scream. And basically, it showed what was going on in the baby's reaction to the abortion doctor's attacks on that child, and the baby moving away and trying to, and obviously the argument was, if a baby can experience pain, which is obviously of trying to avoid in the womb, then we need to make that illegal, right? Up to a certain point, one of the arguments is at least stop abortion to the place where the baby can feel pain. The whole idea of silent scream, if we could hear what was going on inside this womb, it would be horrific. But let's hide it. Let's do it in a back room somewhere. Let's make sure that nobody, even ultrasound technology was viewed as an attack on the abortion industry, because now we could actually see in the womb and we could see some pretty clear pictures, and we can no longer call that child a mass of cells. This is a baby. And this baby sucks its thumb, and this baby wiggles around. This baby can experience pain, and we should, the ultrasound helps us get a window into what's really going on. So all that had to be shrouded, had to be covered. We cover it with language, euphemistic language. We try to do everything we can to create the music that's loud enough so that we don't have to really look at what's taking place and what's going on. And that is the abortion industry in America today, even to the point when people try to expose what's really going on or show a picture of what happens at abortion, people are offended more at the picture than at the act. They're offended more at having to look at the fruit of abortion rather than dealing with the fact that abortion itself should be stopped. And let's talk a little bit about this. He has a section in the book called The Racist God. And he mentions that the rich, so if I'm rich and you're poor, I don't want to offer my own children as a sacrifice. I'll just go to you and I'll pay you to take one of your kids, and I'll, if you're poor, and I'll offer that child as my sacrifice to the gods so that it's not of any personal inconvenience to me. What's the connection here between racism, I guess, between unequal socioeconomic situations, exploiting the poor by the rich, and how abortion is doing the same thing today?
Yeah, I mean, even that mindset is basically saying the sacrifice of children is disproportionately focused on those with less money.
right,
with those who are poor.
And so you go to our urban areas. In some areas, particularly in Black America, we have more children in some of the urban areas that are being aborted than live births. Mm-hmm. And so, and that was Margaret Sanger's intention. She, of course, was the ultimate racist. She wanted to plant abortion clinics, Planned Parenthood clinics in urban areas to particularly focus on people of color with the goal of exterminating what she called social weeds. I mean, these were people that needed to be wiped out. So, you know, Planned Parenthood was really on the front end of the genocide, you know, movement in America, their goal being to exterminate poor urban people of color, whether Black or brown. So this is still happening today, where we have a disproportionate number of those in our inner cities who are choosing abortion as an option. So again, it's interesting how what happened in the past is happening once again. Abortion was weighted against the children of poor and minorities. The children of a poor family, particularly of a Black family, was far more likely to be killed by abortion than a child who was not Black or poor. And there were now American cities where more Black children were killed through abortion than were actually born. So that's a tragedy that, again, is replaying in America. Let's talk a bit about what he calls the cannibal culture. He said, in the pagan world, it was believed that child sacrifice resulted in benefits, not only for the individual who offered the sacrifice, but for the entire society. And so the practice of child sacrifice was likewise hailed for its beneficial effect on, quote, the public good. The killing of babies was said to benefit society, not only in freeing women to pursue careers, but for holding the promise of breakthroughs in medicine and in health. And so to further enhance the public good and to increase their profit margin, the abortion industry engaged in the sale of body parts harvested from the murdered children. So this, again, it amazed me. Remember when the undercover videos were being released? Planned Parenthood executives were caught red-handed for talking about the sale of body parts from aborted babies. And then when that video was made public, our current Vice President, Kamala Harris, in California, in her role, attacked that gentleman who created those videos, exposed that truth, and actually attacked him for exposing it instead of, again, recognizing this horrific evil that was taking place. I mean, we're talking about stuff that's on the level of, like, Nazi Germany stuff. I mean, this is disgusting. Who in the world could stomach the thought of taking aborted babies, harvesting their body parts and selling them on the black market, so to speak? And it was all justified because, well, we need these body parts to do experiments so that we can help cure, you know, disease or whatever. But, I mean, you talk about a dark, hideous, wicked, evil abomination, to use God's word. And this was fully exposed, and yet nobody was ever held accountable, to my knowledge, for any of that atrocity.
Except the makers of video,
yeah,
got,
yeah, who is
major league of troubles.
Yeah. Yeah, and being sued and having to, you know, the whole goal being to just bankrupt him and destroy, yeah, his livelihood. But this just shows you what a dark place we are in as Americans, that this would even be tolerated. Something is sick as that. And again, it's, if there's any justification, it's for the common good, which goes right back, you know, again, I guess the thing that's eye-opening for me is these same arguments have been floating around for millennia. There's nothing new about human beings or fallen human nature. I guess it just gets recycled. And so now we are literally, as he says, cannibalizing our children, all on the altars of Moloch here.
Yeah, and even the thought of, like, hey, you know what, these kids, if they were born, they're not properly provided for, it's going to weigh on the society.
Yeah.
So again, the argument is used for the betterment of society, so we have less kids who are on, you know, governmental assistance, you know.
Right.
Like, there's all kind of framing of data to kind of rationalize the argument, except for the super important factor of culture, of what is our culture, what message are we sending,
yeah,
what are we saying about life, because the interaction between each other
right.
on the civil basis is based on the concept of life. I might not like you, but right. I'm going to treat you with respect because yep. you are because I respect life.
Right. And so yeah. even if I disagree with you politically or whatever, there's still a mutual sense of, yeah. of you're a human being created in God's image. When that goes out, I mean, now you're talking about lawlessness, violence. You know, if you're willing to do that to a baby, an innocent child, then why would I not do that to a grown adult? Or we see a lot of these elderly being taken advantage of now, and all kinds of things. So it's just that slippery slope that leads you into just complete and utter violence.
Increased crime, increased corruption, yeah. Just societal harms originating from this cultural move. But you can rationalize it and say, well, economic, it'll help us in whatever. But where are all the cultural shifts, cultural messaging you are sending by enacting right. these policies?
It's not the common good. It's the common destruction. I mean, it literally leads us into a common depravity in our culture that's really sad. Let's end with this last point because I think it's really powerful. This was called Moloch's Priest. He said the Greek philosopher Plato wrote of how the Carthaginian culture viewed child sacrifice. Quote, with us, for instance, human sacrifice is not legal but unholy, whereas the Carthaginians perform it as a thing that they account as holy and legal. So Plato's saying in his culture it was viewed as unholy, but the Carthaginians viewed child sacrifice mm-hmm. as something holy and legal. And so they not only legalized it, but they celebrated it. And he says the killing of an unborn child was not only legal, it was hallowed as a sacred rite to be praised and celebrated and venerated as something beautiful and sacrosanct. And so he ends that chapter by quoting voices in our culture today. You know, when Roe v. Wade came under assault, right? The stuff that they were saying, the arguments, the passion behind the arguments, the way they were framing the arguments, trying to defend Roe, was crazy for those of us who embrace Christ. So he says, here's some direct quotes. Our culture needs new rituals as well as new laws to restore abortion to its sacred dimension. Now we're talking about the murder of babies as something sacred. Abortion is a major blessing and a sacrament in the hands of women. So again, for those who claim separation of church and state, they're now invoking the language of church to support a hideous practice of child sacrifice. It's not immoral to choose abortion. It's simply another kind of morality. A pagan one. Now, that's an accurate statement because we are going backwards to paganism. We're not moving forward. We're going back to really dark, sick practices that the gospel liberated the planet from to begin with. And so that actually is a true statement. It's simply a different kind of morality, a pagan one. It's a demonic kind of morality. Abortion is a sacrifice. Abortion is a sacred act. And so this is where we're at today. You know, when you think about temple prostitutes or folks that would engage in sex in the name of worship, we have come full circle. Sex today is a sacred sacrament. It is a different form of morality. It is a neo-pagan morality. And we have those today that are looking you straight in the face without blinking as if this is a great thing. We should celebrate this, and we need to protect this. And that's what our current president has vowed to do. If he's elected as president for 4 more years, he's going to make sure that all these things are restored and that child sacrifice is booming in America. So God forbid. We need an awakening desperately.
Yeah, and we've been saying this for a long time. It's a religious zeal. You know, having grew up in a church environment my whole life, I can tell when someone is just become religious about something.
Yep.
It's no longer about really like trying to find out what is right or being objective or open to your blind spots. You use a religious zeal to justify whatever you do. And again, you look at our culture today, I mean, it were full of religious zeal all over. The religious zeal. That's why people can be have blatant hypocrisy and be covered up by other by others. Why? Because they're part of the same religion. Yeah. Their loyalty is to the religion and not to the truth. So we've been saying this for, I mean, I've been saying this for decades now, that it's a religion, new religions coming out, and under the guise of atheism or rational or scientific. But I think more and more now is like they're showing their true colors. If there's a religious zeal, it's just a different religion. You know, well, it's easier to replace Christianity by saying, hey, you're archaic. We're moving to the realm of science. It's really hard to replace Christianity by saying we're going to be more pagan. But they started out with science and rationality and all that stuff. But now more and more, they're like, actually, we're being pagan, and we're not afraid to hide it now. So
yeah, and of course they might not use the word pagan because they're progressives, right? They're enlightened,
more sophisticated.
But yeah. It is paganism. It is a worship of sexual pleasure in this situation, a rewriting of the laws. We talk about moral relativism. You know, who are you to impose your beliefs? Blah 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 blah. And yet, what we're seeing with the Christian worldview is that as soon as you're accusing me of shoving my views down your throat, you're actually doing the same thing back to me. You cannot avoid truth. The issue of truth is huge, and you have to land on what is truth and what's the source of truth. And if you throw God out, this is the kind of demonic hell that you end up living in. So it doesn't surprise me that we've seen really an increase in lawlessness, murders, violence, disrespect for elders, disrespect for
lawlessness and corruption in government.
Yeah, yeah, you know, any form of authority.
Yeah,
you know, it's just gonna get worse until we experience a return. And so I'll close with this. You know, I was sharing with you guys before this podcast. I was talking with my son, and I was talking about how when the demon spirits come back, they come back with seven other friends. It's seven times worse. And he said something that was really, really powerful. He said, "So, Dad, what you're saying is we need a revival that's seven times stronger than we've ever seen." And it just hit me. That's exactly what we need. We need a massive return to the Lord. We need a powerful, powerful awakening in America to overcome the depth of darkness in which we're currently living in. And again, the Satan and his kingdom are no match for the Lord. But the church has got to lead the way on this. But we need a seven times more powerful spiritual awakening in America to overcome the effects of our apostasy. Lord, forgive us for turning away from you, and forgive us for opening the door to the incredible perversion and darkness and abomination that we see all over our land. So church, this is not a moment for depression and gloom. This is a time to press in, to stand for truth, to lead the way, and to cry out for a move of God, which is what the Lord expects us to do, and to speak the truth wherever we go. So thank you for tuning in. We'll look forward to getting back into this next week.